Welcome to Speak It On. This program is designed for the edification and entertainment of the listeners and not designed to be representative of a church, nonprofit organization, or denomination. Opinions expressed are solely those of the host.
Hey, welcome back. So, let's look at the verse that was heard around the world and launched a thousand questions. I got an email from a friend who's in Bible school, and he asked me a really good question. He said, "Hey, LA, can you tell me why Matthew chapter 17, verse 21 is in some versions, and in other versions it's not?" Well, I gotta tell you, that sounds like a really simple question, right? Oh, no, it's not. It's not a completely simple question. The reason I say that is not because the answer isn't pretty much straightforward to understand. The complication is this is just one verse that has sparked a lot of animosity within the church itself. Okay? Within the church itself. Now, in order to kind of put this in context, okay, Matthew chapter 17, we see Jesus is with the disciples, okay, and he has just come down from the Mount of Transfiguration, all right, which basically there was a mount, and he took a mountain. I say mount. I'm using KJV language again. I do love that version. Okay, so here's the thing. There was a mountain, and in the mountains in the Holy Land are not like what we think. It's not like Mount Everest or the Himalayas or the Rocky Mountains. It's not that. They're very, very tall hills. As far as, it depends on your perspective, okay? But nonetheless, they're, you know, we refer to them as mountains because in antiquity they looked at them that way. So here's the deal. Jesus is coming, and he had taken Peter, James, and John with him. They're the inner circle kind of fellas. And then he's coming down, and they've had the transfiguration situation. And then when Jesus comes and approaches the rest of the disciples, because the rest of the disciples were still there, he only took Peter, James, and John with him up there. Now, Jesus runs into a guy who's got a really serious problem. Let me read this, and I'm going to read this in the, in something called the Passion Translation, okay? So, in Matthew 17:14, it starts there. It says, "They came where a very large crowd had gathered to wait for Jesus. A man came and knelt before him and said, 'Lord, please show your tender mercy toward my son. He has a demon who afflicts him. He has epilepsy and he suffers horribly from seizures. He often falls into the cooking fire or into the river. I brought him to your followers, but they weren't able to heal him.' Jesus replied, "Where is your faith? Can't you see how wayward and wrong this generation is? How much longer do I stay with you and put up with your doubts? But bring your son to me." Then Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him, and the boy was instantly healed. Later, the disciples came to him privately and asked, "Why couldn't we cast out the demon?" And he told them, "It was because of your lack of faith. I promise you, if you have faith inside of you, no bigger than the size of a small mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move away from here and go there,' and you will see it move. There is nothing you cannot do. But this kind of demon is cast out only through prayer and fasting." So, the verse in question is Matthew 17:21, and it is, "But this kind of demon is cast out through prayer and fasting." Okay, so just to let you know straight up, that's in the King James, all right? Totally in the King James. If you go to the ESV, the English Standard Version, you're not going to find it. It goes from Matthew 17:20 to presto changeo, Matthew 17:22. And if you get the Revised Standard, you're going to look at that one and you're going to see, okay, Matthew 17:20, and you're reading loud long, and boom, it jumps to 17:22. Whoa. So then we jump over to the New English Translation, and it says, and it keeps going, you know, Matthew 17:20, and you're reading, and boom, you go to Matthew 17:22. So what's up? Now, tell you what you would, and just to be fair to the KJV people, okay, because I do got respect, okay, and it works this way. It'll never be the kind they want, but I'm still going out of believer's love. So here's the thing. In the KJV, you've got it, Matthew 17:21, right after 20. And it says, "Howbeit this kind goeth out not but by prayer and fasting." Okay, so, interesting verse. Seems like a ninja. It just pops in, pops out. So the question is, why? Why in the world is it in certain Bibles and not in other Bibles? Now, there are groups of people that believe it is an absolute demonic conspiracy. Okay? And they're serious about it. I'm not saying that to be funny. I'm saying that to tell you that there are people that are very serious as a heart attack about verses like this in the Bible. Now, here's what goes on, so to speak. The short answer why it isn't in there is because, and you'll see a footnote in a lot of those modern versions, and a lot of the versions, some of them include it and have it bracketed. I know the NASB 1977 edition, I believe, has it bracketed. There'll be a footnote, and it'll say, "Not in some of the oldest manuscripts." Okay? That's what it'll say. "Not in some of the oldest manuscripts." Well, what do they mean? All right. So, the manuscripts we're talking about, by and large, are going to be two. And that's going to be the Codex Sinaiticus. I keep calling it the Sinaiticus, but it's not. It's the Sinaiticus. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Because it was found in on a at a, I believe that was a monastery at what we think is Sinai. It's labeled Sinai. And the Codex Vaticanus, all right? Those are the two, by and large. Now, it's important to know, in if you're really thinking about this, okay, two principles. Number one, how do we choose these manuscripts? Okay, so what? And the oldest ones are not. You know, who cares? Well, here's the thing. As far as just manuscripts in general, Greek manuscripts, we have like 5,000 plus of the New Testament. And there are various forms, various shapes, various inclusions, and they're all over the place. Now, the thing that's interesting is that when you look at all that, I mean, that's a lot of manuscripts, all right? So, if you tried to read every one of them, that'd probably give you a headache. My guess is it might take a while. And here's the thing. They're also in Greek, and a special kind of Greek called Koine Greek. And the manuscripts themselves are quite numerous. So how do you deal with it? Well, it's generally thought, okay, and this is a generality, this is a thought process, all right, that the older the manuscript, and how do you figure a manuscript's date? Well, you can date it in various literature ways by the type of writing and the agent, you know, the yellowing of the parchment. But you can also do carbon dating. You do all kinds of fun stuff. But the thing is you find out how old a manuscript is itself. The oldest manuscripts, the older manuscripts, are thought to be closer to the original writer, all right? Because what we think, you know, is, and what we know, is that there were original copies at one point. And of course, or there was an original. It wasn't a copy, it was an original. There was an original, just like a letter. And Paul had it written, and boom, there it was. And these letters were copied by hand. Wasn't any Xerox machine or any of that wild stuff. They'd copy all those jokers by hand. Well, the closer, or the older the manuscript, the closer it is to the original. The closer it is to the original, the fewer times, possibly, it's been copied. Or at least that edition, you know, is copied. The fewer times it's copied, the fewer amounts of mistakes or scribal errors may occur in the manuscript. All right. It's kind of like if you've ever played the game Gossip. The game Gossip, if you don't know what it's about, people in church do gossip all the time, but I'm talking about the game. Used to be there was a game and you get people in a line or in a circle, and then one person would have an original idea and would write it down, and then they would read it to the next person. And then that person, you know, but that person only got to hear it once. Then they would repeat it to the next person, and then they would go all the way around and see how close to the original message it actually was. So, and if you've participated in a game similar to that, you know that there's a lot of distortion just because people, you know, are listening, they're trying to hear, they don't understand the accent, stuff like that. And so the original message kind of gets a little blurred, all right? And sometimes it's totally different. So the idea is this, the closer you get to the original person, the more correct the actual manuscript or copy is. How do you determine how close it is? By the date. Okay. Now, in some ways, and this is a personal thing with me, I totally agree with that, okay? However, let me also say that oldest doesn't always mean best. If the oldest manuscript is messed up, then it doesn't matter how many times, you know, it comes down. Now, here's where I'm dancing in hot water, because inerrancy people are fixing to get crazy on me. And I'm not suggesting the original manuscripts weren't perfect. I'm not. Okay? That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, you know, you've got the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, way old. And so, and it's screwy. So just because you got something that's really ancient and screwy doesn't make it any better. But in general, there's been so much scholarly research on some of this, all right, that I tend toward the fact, and by the way, I believe God preserves His Word. I believe that God preserves His Word straight up. So, they say that the Bible that we have is, and it's, the percentage differs a little bit, but it's like 98.5%, 100% of what, you know, 98.5% of what the original was. And that there are some variations, but they don't ever affect doctrine. I'm willing to run with that. Now, but there are people who will not. They are not going to do it. Now, how do you get the version or the translation that we got now? How does it get from these ancient manuscripts, these ancient letters and little pieces of parchment and all that fun stuff, to the Bible that we got? Well, the process is a little different, because these, when you get a translation team together, those guys don't go back and go through all 5,000. Now, instead, what they'll do is they will go with the older manuscripts that are more complete, and they will also use conglomerations, okay, amalgamations. There are two that I'll mention. Number one is the Textus Receptus. That was an amalgamation of various manuscripts, including the Vaticanus, and it went through quite a few permutations, and it became the received text, and that's what the KJV is based upon. Now, I can guarantee you someone is going to rip me a new one over this and explain a million ways to Sunday why I'm wrong. Okay. God love you. Do it. But here's the other thing. The one that a lot of the modern translations use is the Nestle and Aland. Aland, I think. I may be pronouncing that wrong. It's A-L-A-N-D. Nestle and Aland. Greek New Testament. These two scholars got together and did a similar situation where they go through all of the textual evidence they've got. They pick certain ones they feel are most credible and whatnot, and you can't ignore the oldest ones. You just can't. You have to look at them. And they developed a Greek New Testament as well. And what a lot of the modern translation groups will do is somebody says, let's start a new translation. So they'll get some money together and they'll grab a bunch of people together that are biblical scholars and they'll say, okay, I need you guys to make a translation. You know, and I want your translation to be something, you know, be more readable for surfers or something like that, because literally we've got so many translations now, it's absolutely just mind-boggling. I mean, you can have any translation on the planet now. I mean, it seems like, you know, they're going to make a translation of the Bible for skydivers. God bless you, skydivers. But it's getting a little crazy. But here's the thing. They get together and they go through the information, and usually what they will do is they may use the Text of Receptus, or they may use the Nestles and Aland, and or they may use the United Bible Society group. There's no telling. But they'll tell you what they're doing. And then they'll translate that joker. And then, boom, you'll have your... And, of course, if it's Greek, you'll have your New Testament. If it's Hebrew, then... And to be honest with you, the Old Testament's a little bit more structured and cut and dry in some ways. But that's how you wind up with the New Testament Bible translation for skydivers. So that ends up being the process. Now, getting back to this verse, why is Matthew 17:21 not there? Because they say it's not in some of the older manuscripts. And now, interestingly enough, I believe this verse is in Mark. But it doesn't say prayer and fasting. It says prayer. So what they believe is they believe that possibly someone who was doing some scribal stuff saw it over there in Mark and might have got it mixed up and popped it in the same spot, because, you know, Matthew, Mark, and Luke are all synoptic, which means they have a lot of the same information in them in similar order. So it can be kind of confusing sometimes. So they think maybe that somebody copying it said, well, it just needs to be in here, and just went ahead and added it. Or maybe they're just getting really tired after they've done like X number of tons of Greek that day, and we're like, oh man, oh wow, I need some coffee. And then they put it in there on accident. Now, don't know. Bottom line is, don't know. Personally, just me, I want to see it in there. Now, here's another thing though, and this is something that just really pokes a lot of KJV people are very sensitive about this issue, and that is the fact that you've got the Vaticanus in the mix. They don't trust it, and I'm not so sure that the Sinaiticus, however you pronounce that one, is also trusted. I think they're into the Alexandrian Codex. But here's the thing. They don't like the Vaticanus. It's a Catholic version. It is a Catholic manuscript. And I think that joker's in Latin. Maybe. But anyway, the issue is, you know, if it's Catholic, they ain't in it, okay? And there's just a heart attack about it. So, anyhow. So if you want to go back, that's a lot of information to just say this. It's not in there because some of the older manuscripts said it's not. It's a footnote in a lot of the modern translations. In some translations, it's bracketed. That makes people crazy in certain in certain circles. And personally, I want to see the verse in there. I don't think we're losing anything since it's mentioned in another gospel. Now, does it say prayer and fasting? No, it does not. But I don't see how that would complicate things. A lot of times people get prescriptive and they'll say, well, you got to understand this demon ain't coming out unless you do prayer and fasting. And somebody else say, well, no, in Mark it just says prayer, so that's the way it works. Well, here's a thought process. If you're going to try to cast a demon out of somebody, God love you. Because that's going to be a real issue. And I'd want prayer and fasting in that situation, most definitely. So here's the thing. It's there are many other verses. Many other verses we could talk about. But I just want to use that one because that one just seems to be like poking the bruise right there. I mean, that just boom, sets people off. Anytime, and by the way, I don't think for a second that translators translate flippantly. Sometimes they do. And I'll be a very... I'm going to be very upfront and tell you I do not like the New World Translation ever. They monkey with the Greek a whole ton, and I ain't into that one. But and I do lean hard towards the KJV, but I am not a KJV only kind of person. Personally, I think we ought to know the Greek and Hebrew. I think we ought to learn to read it in the originals. I think it'd be really cool if you could pull up pictures of the original fragments of the manuscripts we got and read it for yourself. That would be just blooming tripping awesome. But that's a little much to ask. So at the very least, I think it's a good idea to have several versions, and by all means, please make sure one of them is KJV, because it is beautiful. So anyway, God love you in your Bible study, and in your growth, and in your Christian walk. Share Jesus with someone as soon as possible. Today, tomorrow, this week, as soon as you can. Keep on keeping on.
To this edition of Speak It On. And as always, don't be afraid to speak the word in boldness and truth. And may God bless all of your efforts.